This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Sir Christopher Frayling is a globally renowned writer and film historian. In 2001, he was knighted for services to art and design education. One area of cinema that Sir Christopher has dedicated a lot of time to is the Italian-made spaghetti westerns of the mid-1960s, and in particular the films of Sergio Leone, who made classics such as The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, and Once Upon a Time in the West, which is currently screening at the Astor. Christopher has provided the commentary on many DVD releases of Leone's films, plus he wrote Something to Do with Death, a book that many regard as the definitive biography of Sergio Leone. Christopher, welcome to the Casting Couch on Joy 94.9.
Thank you very much.
Now, what is it about Sergio Leone's films that captured your imagination and continues to do so today?
Well, when I first, the first one that I saw was A Fistful of Dollars with Clint Eastwood, and I saw it in 1967. It was made in 1964, but it took a little while to reach English-speaking territories, you know, Australia, England, and America. But it came out in 67, and I was just blown away by partly the visual style of it. You know, the look was so different. Here was this man, Clint Eastwood, wearing a poncho, and he was wandering around the Spanish desert, which was dusty and yellow, and it looked completely different to an American Western. And secondly, there was the music, this extraordinary Ennio Morricone score for A Fistful of Dollars, which, you know, we were used to American Westerns where the music is very symphonic and lush and a big orchestra for the big country, you know, like Magnificent Seven or The Big Country, that sort of music. And here was a Fender Stratocaster guitar and people singing incomprehensible lyrics and strange instruments and a jew's harp and all this, and it was like the Beach Boys out west. It was much more hip, you know, and much more rock and roll, really, as a sound. And thirdly, that it was very cynical, you know, that instead of a man's got to do what a man's got to do and might write in the American way, he was actually, someone says to Clint Eastwood, you know, why are you doing this for us? And he puts his hand out and says, $500? So he's on the take, and it's a very cynical, and that chimed with 1967. You know, we're all reading Catch-22 about the absurdity of war. The Vietnam War was going on. Bob Dylan was singing With God on Our Side and The Times They Are a-Changing. And it was absolutely on the button, you know, this atmosphere of we don't like John Wayne anymore. We love Hollywood movies and we like the look of them and we like the idea of Hollywood movies, but we don't very much like John Wayne anymore. And that movie really captured it. So I started trying to persuade people to take this movie a little bit seriously because the newspapers panned it universally. You know, they all said, this is a bad American Western. They couldn't understand that it was basically an Italian Western, you know. They thought it was a kind of copy of an American Western that hadn't come off. So I started trying to persuade my friends and take them to the cinema. Then I started writing about it. Then the second one came out for a few dollars more. Then The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, all back to back. And it became a kind of crusade, really. And really quite late in the day, you know, even today in Italy, Leone isn't rated as highly as he should be. You know, that you go to a bookshop in Rome and there's lots and lots of volumes on Pasolini and Bertolucci and Visconti and, you know, all these people, and maybe a little picture book on Leone. And in Italy, he's still a prophet without honor in his own country. So I became the sort of keeper of the flame, and I got to know him. So whenever he came to England, you know, we'd meet, and I once sat next to him, actually, watching Once Upon a Time in the West in his private cinema in Rome.
Oh, wow.
He was very tickled that this Brit had taken up the cause of, you know, saying that his films were interesting. He was rather touched by that, I think, because he didn't get much of that treatment at home. But it was Fistful of Dollars in 67 that started me going.
Okay, do you think it was because he was working in very much a defined genre that people didn't take him seriously and maybe still don't do so in some parts of the world?
Yeah, I think in Italy, they couldn't forgive him for not making movies about Italy, you know.
Right.
First of all, not making movies about his home country, and secondly, not making movies about social problems.
Okay. Yes.
He was obsessed with genre cinema, you know, that loved Hollywood, didn't like its ideology. You know, Leone grew up in the 1930s in a suburb of Rome called Trastevere, where he'd go to the local flea pit and see all these American movies dubbed into Italian, which they had to be by order of Mussolini. So he'd be watching James Cagney movies, Jimmy Stewart movies, Henry Fonda movies, Gary Cooper movies dubbed into Italian. And for him, America became this sort of land of plenty, this model of freedom almost, you know, the place, the other side of the hill, that was a lot better than living under Mussolini.
Sure.
And it gave him the taste for these genre films. And, you know, he had this extraordinary photographic memory. In an interview I did with him, I remember him describing a scene from The Magnificent Seven to me. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't remember any of the dialogue because he didn't understand English very well. But every shot was in his mind. You know, he'd say, close up, someone's boots. Medium shot, two people facing each other. Long shot, there's a duel or something. And he just had complete recall on the sequences that he loved in Hollywood movies. So he grows up loving Hollywood, but rather cynical about what it represented. And so by the time he makes Once Upon a Time in the West, I mean, the whole movie is about once upon a time, fairy tales, Hollywood, you know, the Hollywood version of the Wild West. And how does that contrast with the real history? So in a way, it becomes the subject of the movie, this love-hate relationship with Hollywood. And people couldn't forgive him for being so interested in America, being interested in Hollywood, in genre. All his movies are basically taking Hollywood genres and doing something new with them. And in Italy, this didn't go down too well.
Yes, of course, because as well as making all the westerns, he did Once Upon a Time in America, which is his take on the American gangster film. And it's very different from any other gangster film.
Yeah, exactly. And so he wanted to ring the change. I mean, he felt with the Western that it had gone off the rails in the 1950s. You know, he loved John Ford's movies of the 40s and early 50s, and Howard Hawks, and the great sort of founding Henry Hathaway, the great founding fathers of the American Western. He loved their style and he loved the look, but he felt that, you know, Freud reached the Wild West round about 1948, and suddenly movies got very talky and psychological and all to do with motivation. And so you got a new breed of actors like, you know, Paul Newman, Robert Mitchum. And I mean, they only once said, there's a film called The Left-Handed Gun that came out in the 50s, all about Billy the Kid. And he said, you know, you got the feeling that if there'd been a social worker around, Billy the Kid would never have happened, you know. And he liked a bit of shooting. I mean, he liked his westerns with lots of action, lots of horses, lots of gunplay, and lots of physical activity. He didn't like too much talk. So he kind of felt Hollywood had gone off the rails a bit in the 50s. And he was, you know, giving America back as a gift its own fairy stories, but told in a different way.
Oh, wow. Was he a fan of directors like Sam Peckinpah, who sort of introduced that very violent, cynical aesthetic in the 60s?
Yes, and it's interesting. Peckinpah once said that he'd never have made The Wild Bunch if Leone hadn't created the commercial and artistic environment for him to do it. You know, after the $3 films with Clint Eastwood, it became very fashionable to make movies set in Mexico and New Mexico. The Western shifted from the Middle West to the Southwest, you know, because, I mean, basically, Leone is making movies in Spain with Italian and Spanish faces, and they're all set in the sort of Catholic Southwest of America. So that was it. Bounty Hunters, which Leone had made commercially very successful, and the idea of, you know, taking a last stand, all those sort of themes which come through in The Wild Bunch, Peckinpah said that Leone had made them possible. And it's very interesting. In 1971, when Leone was preparing his film, which was called A Fistful of Dynamite, or DocuSucker, which is his Mexican Revolution film.
You know, that is my favourite Leone film.
Yeah, well, originally Peckinpah was to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted Sam Peckinpah to direct it. He wanted his name next to Peckinpah's on the poster that Leone would produce and Peckinpah would direct, but it never came off.
Oh. And what is the proper title for once a Fistful of Dynamite?
Well, it's in French, I think it had the best title.
Yeah,
it was called Il était une fois la révolution, Once Upon a Time, the Revolution. Mm-hmm. So you'd have had Once Upon a Time in the West, Once Upon a Time, the Revolution, then Once Upon a Time in America as a kind of trilogy. In Italy, it was called Giù la testa, which means keep your head down.
Mm-hmm.
And In America, it was called Duck, You Sucker, and then it didn't do very well, so they changed the title to A Fistful of Dynamite to make it sound like A Fistful of Dollars, which it wasn't, and hoped to get their money back because everyone would think it was a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yes, of course. And so all these titles were playing on the fact that this film starred James Coburn, as a dynamite expert.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was, you know, Coburn as an Irish rebel on the run who goes to Mexico, who meets up with a Mexican peasant, and they play a sort of cat, played by Rod Steiger, and they play a sort of cat and mouse game through the Mexican Revolution. It's a really interesting film. As a matter of fact, that's just been restored in Italy, so with any luck, a big restored print will be circulating next year of that one as well.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Now, look, just tell me, how important was casting to Leone? Because I think one of the most extraordinary things about Once Upon a Time in the West, which I caught last night for the first time again in many years, is you've got Henry Fonda, this iconic American actor, playing a really evil, evil man.
I know. It's quite interesting. I mean, Leone, he was, I think, brilliant at casting. You know, if you think of the Dollars films, there's Clint Eastwood, who at that stage is playing the second lead in this American TV series called Rawhide. I don't know if you remember that, but he played the ramrod called Rowdy Yates, who took these cattle across America week after week after week. And he'd never really made a big movie, and they only cast him after watching an episode of Rawhide called The Incident of the Black Sheep. And then in the second film, for a few dollars more, he remembers Lee Van Cleef. Now, Lee Van Cleef had played the bad guy in countless westerns in the 1950s, like High Noon and Gunfight at the OK Corral and so on, The Bravados. And he'd been almost forgotten in America, and in fact was in semi-retirement because he really wasn't working anymore. He'd had a very bad car accident in the late 50s, and his career was in decline. But Leone had a long memory. He remembered Lee Van Cleef. He remembered his silhouette, how he looked, how he walked. So Leone makes him a star in the second film for a few dollars more. And then he remembers Eli Wallach from The Magnificent Seven and How the West Was Won, so he casts him in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly and launches a huge career for Eli Wallach in Italy. So already he had the flair for casting, but he'd wanted Henry Fonda to play the man with no name originally, rather than Clint Eastwood.
All right.
And in 1964, he sent him the script for A Fistful of Dollars, and Fonda later claimed that he'd never actually seen it. His agent thought the script was so bad that he never even showed it to him. But the idea was that this bounty hunter, who was on the take and rather scurrilous and disreputable, would be played by this character who'd played all these noble, you know, characters of American history, young Mr. Lincoln, Wyatt Earp, the Grapes of Wrath. You know, he played these incredibly noble characters. He had this wonderful, liberal, noble, lanky image, and he wanted to cast him as a bit of a bad guy from the word go. But in Once Upon a Time in the West, he cast him as a real bad guy who goes around shooting entire families and things. And I had the opportunity a little while ago to interview Jane Fonda in London, and she said that her father got the script from Leone, translated into English, read it, and said, look, I can't play this part. I've spent my life building up this wonderful, noble image, and here's this guy who, you know, the moment he appears, wipes out an entire family in the desert. I can't do this. And it was Jane who persuaded him. She said, look, it's really hip, it's going to be exciting, Leone is a really hip kind of director, take it on, Dad. So Henry Fonda arrived in Rome with brown contact lenses. You know, Fonda has very blue eyes.
Yeah, so distinctive in this film,
And with a stubble of beard, because he thinks he's supposed to look like a bad guy. He tried to make him look like John Wilkes Booth, the man that shot Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
And the moment he stepped onto the tarmac of Fiumicino Airport, Leone, through an interpreter, said, now get him to take the contact lenses off, get him to shave.
Yep.
I want him to look just like Henry Fonda, and I want him to be a real bad guy, and I want the first scene where he appears, he comes out of the undergrowth wearing a long canvas coat, and the music is swelling up, and an entire family has been shot, and we can't quite see who it is through the dust, and the camera goes round to his shoulder height, and suddenly the whole audience get a full-frame picture of Henry Fonda, and he said, I want everyone in the audience in unison to say, Jesus Christ, it's Henry Fonda.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of casting, you know, against type. And Claudia Cardinale, I mean, in this film, Once Upon a Time in the West, for the first time, Leone has a female character as the pivot of the entire action.
And a really tough character, too.
Yeah, she is. And Italian actress, and she Bernardo Bertolucci, who helped to write the original story of Once Upon a Time in the West, claimed to me anyway that he was the one who persuaded Leone to have a female character at the centre of it. It wasn't going to be all boys stuff this time, you know, that she was the key figure, really. Charles Bronson, who wasn't a very well-known actor then, you know, he'd appeared in The Magnificent Seven and The Great Escape, but in quite small parts. He suddenly becomes this sort of Mount Rushmore face, you know, of this avenging character with no name that everyone calls Harmonica. So, no, his casting, he really had an eye for casting, and because he had so many close-ups, and because the movies packed such a punch, you only had to appear in a Leone movie, and you were a star, you know, because all these people went back to America. Bronson went back as a superstar, Eastwood went back as a superstar, Lee Van Cleef had this wonderful career late in life, Escape from New York and all those films. You know, he became a star again as well. It was the close-ups. In fact, at the beginning of Once Upon a Time in the West, one of the bad guys is played by Woody Strode, the black actor who worked for John Ford, who was an American footballer. And Woody Strode wrote in his memoirs, he said, I'd appeared in lots and lots of films. I'd had much bigger parts. I'd had speaking parts. But in Once Upon a Time in the West, I get such a close-up that I'd never had before, and everybody remembered it, and it was worth all the other parts put together.
Sensational. I'm talking to Sir Christopher Frayling, who, among other things, is the biographer of the legendary spaghetti western director Sergio Leone. This is the Casting Couch on Joy 94.9. Many contemporary directors have made films as direct homages to Leone. Are there any recent films or directors working today that you feel articulates Leone's sensibility?
Well, I think it goes in various waves. I think in the 60s, a lot of American filmmakers who went to film school in the 60s of the so-called movie brat generation, that is, Scorsese, Coppola, John Milius, John Carpenter, etc., cut their teeth on watching Once Upon a Time in the West in film school. And if you watch John Carpenter's films of the 70s, Assault on Precinct 13, for example, which was his second film, It has whole chunks of dialogue from Once Upon a Time in the West. In fact, Carpenter got it so bad, he had the music from Once Upon a Time in the West played at his wedding.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And on a church organ. So that generation, you know, and you can see, you know, Leone once said to me that when he went to see Close Encounters, Spielberg, he saw that opening scene where, do you remember the dust?
These
old American aeroplanes from the war suddenly appear, and this airman appears through the dust in a leather jacket.
Yep.
And Leone turned to the bloke next to him in a cinema in Rome and said, that's a Leone sequence. So that generation, you know, and then the more recently, and Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick, according to Leone, phoned up just after he'd seen Once Upon a Time in the West and said, how did you get that interplay between music and image, which is so brilliant in the film? You know, it's complete integration of the music track and the visual track. And Leone said, well, it's quite simple. You get the music written in advance before you make the movie. And in fact, Morricone wrote the score of Once Upon a Time in the West, and it was recorded with a small orchestra and a piano and played on an open reel tape recorder on the set of the movie. So everyone's acting to the music, and even the horses are trotting in time with the music at one point in the film.
It's extraordinary.
I'd really love to do that. And then he went off and made Barry Lyndon, where he does exactly the same thing.
He shot
the movie around these tracks of classical music by Handel and others, cut the film to the pre-existing music track, and made it in exactly the same way. You could say that Barry Lyndon is Once Upon a Time in Georgian England. And so, you know, so there's that influence. But then, you know, more recently, the next generation that was influenced, I think, is Tarantino and Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Quentin Tarantino, he keeps taking bits of score from Morricone to use in Kill Bill or other films.
Inglourious Bastards.
That he's just made. There's whole chunks of Morricone in the score. And in fact, I did an interview with Morricone last year for his 80th birthday in Rome. And he told me that Tarantino had sent him the script for Inglourious Basterds, and Morricone reckoned it wasn't quite for him to write the score, so he said, thank you very much. But it didn't seem to stop Tarantino. He simply used old tracks of Morricone instead. And Rodriguez, of course, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, and the other films that he's made,
yes.
Mariachi, you know, which are
Desperado.
Kind of homages, not so much to Once Upon a Time in the West, but to the Dollars films.
Mm.
So it continues. I think movie makers who enjoy making films about films, you know, cineast type movie makers who, you know, in I don't want to get pretentious about it, but in art circles, there's, you know, they describe people who do realist movies as first order meanings, and people who make movies about movies or art about art, second order meanings. Well, Leone was in the latter category. His films make absolute sense in relation to other films that he'd seen and that the audience has seen. And Once Upon a Time in the West is an entire patchwork, a kind of collage or mosaic of references to hundreds of Westerns. And people who like that sort of cinema are hugely influenced by him. I think the other thing is that, you know, when you look at Fistful of Dollars, he invented the new action hero. That when, you know, if you see an action hero in the 1950s or early 1960s, the hero is a kind of crusader, and you identify with the hero because of the moral stance that he takes, and or, you know, you agree with the cause that he's fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
After Fistful of Dollars, the hero, you don't identify with him because of what he believes in, you identify with his style, with how he looks, with how he walks, with his lifestyle. So, you know, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Bronson, Bruce Willis in a torn T-shirt, all those characters begin, I think, with Clint Eastwood riding into town at the beginning of Fistful of Dollars.
He had a huge influence on action cinema.
Mm,
Hong Kong action, I was going to say, as well, has a massive debt to pay to Leone.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. And the music, you know, that maybe the soundtrack should be a bit hip. You know, all these soundtracks which sort of sample pop music, in a way, Morricone was trying to do that, only writing the whole score with the original Dollars film. So, no, I think it's... Leone once said that sound is 40% of the movie.
Yeah.
And the thing about Italian films was that, you know, they never shot direct sound, so they didn't shoot with a microphone next to the camera. They shot mute, and then they put all the sound on afterwards in the post-production, in the cutting room. And so you could do anything you like, layering the soundtrack with music and dubbing and enhanced sound effects and so on. So sound design became a big, big thing in Italy in the 1960s, and I think that was a bit of a revolution too. Take the first scene of Once Upon a Time in the West, you know, three bad guys waiting at the station, and there's a water wheel that is in bad need of oiling, and you hear this kind of squeaking noise, and you hear a locomotive coming, and, you know, you get the screech of the train, you get the hoot of the whistle, you get a fly buzzing, and it's like a collage of natural sounds, which is quite remarkable as a piece of sound design, and I think that was a bit of a breakthrough as well.
I've been talking to Sir Christopher Frayling, whose book Something to Do with Death is regarded as the definitive biography about Sergio Leone, whose 1968 classic Once Upon a Time in the West is playing at the Astor until next weekend. Christopher, thank you so much for joining me on the Casting Couch today here on Joy 94.9.
I'm envious of you being able to see the movie on the big screen as it should be seen.
Yes, well, I caught it last night and it just hasn't lost any of its power. In fact, I think I liked it more than ever. It's sensational.
Fantastic.
Thank you again, and thank you for keeping the spirit of Leone's cinema so vibrantly alive.
Well, no, as they say in Fistful of Dollars, aim for the heart, Ramon. Adios.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.